Hello, this is your host, Jigme Kyaltseng, and welcome to the Jigme Kyaltseng Show, a podcast where sit-down speakers, singer-songwriters, musicians, sports personalities, actors, radio broadcasters, and a slew of many other professionals from a broad range of fields. This news conversation, retired NHL player, host of the Habs Tonight podcast, investor and private lender Dale Weiss, talks about life off the ice, being drafted by the New York Rangers, memories of the infamous Calgary Flames Vancouver Canucks line brawl, thoughts of former coach John Tortorella, and more. As well as whether he was close to joining the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, with that being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, Dale. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here with you.
It's always a pleasure when we get to talk about hockey and get to actually the first time ever being able to chat with a former NHLer on the podcast. I mean, what is life like off the ice for you since retiring, I guess?
Yeah, I think maybe my retirement has gone a little different than some others. We finished in March 2020. I was still with the Canadians then, and you got April, May, June off. You don't know when the league's going to come back. I was kind of at that point. I played half the year in the minors. I came back up to the NHL. I was playing well. I had a deal in Switzerland on the table, so I was kind of like halfway out the door anyways. And then it shut down for COVID. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I was kind of looking at other things. Off ice that I was going to do. I had some extra time on my hands. That's when I got into real estate. I did my first sixplex development, tore down a duplex, built a sixplex apartment. So I kind of had my foot in the door that way. I didn't end up going to Switzerland. I ended up taking a whole year off. Then I played in Sweden for a little bit. Then I came back. So I kind of had like almost two retirements over a 3 year season. So I was kind of almost like I said, halfway out the door as it was. So it wasn't like, I just got to the end and boom, I was done, and I kind of hit me like a wall of bricks. So you kind of had some time to adjust of it, and I've had some other things to keep me busy. But yeah, I think it's been going well. I think I obviously I miss being around the rink, and I miss the guys the most. I'm playing a little bit beer league this last maybe 3 4 months here. I think kind of gives you that camaraderie back of just being part of a team and stuff that I miss. But it's going pretty well.
Well, there you go. At least you're still sticking towards that beer hockey league thing around, I guess, because it's always good when you, yeah, it sucks when you're not on the ice with those guys that you battle for so long with. And now, like, you sort of come into this life where you're not always around the rink, and you're just used to that feeling where your whole entire career has been on the ice. And so moving from place to place and being traded from one place to the other, and then moving overseas to Europe to experience the European hockey life in Switzerland or Sweden. I really want to talk about, I guess, when you first got drafted. It was in 2008, and you got drafted by the New York Rangers, 111th overall, fourth round. And you don't get to see very many people like your stature where you get picked up that late in the draft, but then you sort of look at it as maybe they got the steal of the draft, and they certainly did with how you sort of ended up with your career with moving from place to place. But you finally found your place in Montreal. But what was it like when you first got drafted? Was that just a surreal feeling that just came over you from the very first second you heard your name called?
Yeah, that was obviously that's something you never forget. Every kid grows up, you dream about getting drafted. I think most kids probably dream about being at the draft and being a first round pick and going up and everything. I think that's kind of every, well, at least it was mine. I actually got passed over at 17. I got passed over at 18. And those two drafts, I didn't really expect to get drafted at 17. At 18, I had a really good year in the Western League. I thought maybe I'd be a late round pick, maybe sixth or seventh round. I didn't end up going. I didn't even get an invite to a camp, not even a tryout, nothing. So I think that kind of put a chip on my shoulder from there. And then the following 19, I had a good year, and I kind of expected to get drafted. I figured I'd go somewhere in the third or fourth round. So, you're watching the draft, and at that time, it was I was with my mom and dad at their house, and the NHL Network was the only place that you could really watch it, but it wasn't really, couldn't really hear the names. They would like, be interviewing guys and bringing the managers or coaches or whoever was there at the draft, and you could kind of hear in the background. And then every so often they'd kind of flash the board and show who was drafted. Obviously, second, third, fourth round go a little quicker than the first. So at one point I thought I heard my name, and me and my dad and mom are kind of looking at each other. I was like, man, that really sounded like my name. And then my phone rang like literally 30 seconds later. Gordy Clark from the New York Rangers calling me to tell me I was drafted. And me and my dad and my mom just started hugging and screaming. Obviously, just a surreal moment, something you dreamed about forever. And yeah, it's something I'll never forget.
For sure. And I guess that's actually funny where the you sort of you have this whole dream of a little kid and you grew up playing hockey and you played on very small teams and then you worked your way up into the NHL and having a chance to be drafted by an NHL team and you're sitting there and you sort of were waiting and you're like, well, did my name get called here or I don't know what happened and then you get the phone call later where you're like, excuse me, you have been drafted. Where are you? But I guess that's just the thrill of it all as a young player coming to the league and you don't know what to expect and then you're there with your family and you get your name called and you're all of a sudden drafted into the NHL and now here you are where now you're thrust into a big league and you don't know what to really expect out of it all. I mean, what was the first sort of thoughts that ran through your head when you first, I guess, came to training camp with the Rangers or anything like that, I guess?
So I got the call to be told that I was drafted, and they told me, keep your phone on you in 20 minutes. Our travel director is going to call you because you got to come here tomorrow. We're having our I don't know what they call it, spring camp or whatever it was for a lot of the younger guys, a couple of the guys that were in the minors at the time. So it was kind of a whirlwind. It was like 2 in the afternoon I got drafted, and by 9 a.m. the next morning I was flying to New York. And that was kind of a cool experience. I was obviously I haven't been to an NHL training camp, so this was kind of my first experience being around an NHL team. We went there for about a week. We had some workouts and some skates and stuff. It was a really tough week. It's not like, now when they have these summer camps, they bring in prospects. I think they might have rules on how long they're allowed on the ice, and they're not as stressful and as tense as they used to be. Like I remember that whole week, we would go to the rink at 7. And I wouldn't leave the rink till like 5:30, and we were on the ice for like 2 3 hours at a time twice a day. It was a lot. So it was a good experience for me to kind of see my competition, see the guys that were drafted around me. Like I said, there was a couple of younger guys that were from their minor league team to kind of see where I stacked up. So it was kind of a good eye opener. I was in June to get me ready for training camp in September.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the whole thing with I guess the development camp that they do with the prospects when they first get drafted and then sort of they work with you with the different development coaches and they work with you on different drills and skills to work on and but like usually when you first get drafted, especially where you were drafted 111th overall, fourth round, usually that usually means that you play more in terms of the, I guess, you go back into the AHL or you go back to your prospect teams and you sort of wait until you get that opportunity to get called up into the NHL. Because I guess nowadays you sort of see that as a pattern where when you get drafted late into the NHL, usually they send you back to your younger team, and then they call you up when they're ready to have you. And give you a shot there. But I mean, for you, you went straight down to the Hartford Wolfpack and you had to make your reps in terms of the AHL and then you finally get the call up and you play for the Rangers. And what was that like experiencing that first time stepping on that Rangers ice and being able to live your dream out in the NHL?
Just kind of rewind there a little bit. I think it was different for me, obviously, because I was drafted as a 19-year-old. Most guys get drafted at 17, 18. Teams have 2 years to sign them. I would have been a 20-year-old going back to junior. You're only allowed three guys, junior guys, that are 20 years old per team. So it was a different scenario for me. But I didn't even expect to sign, to be honest with you, when I first went to training camp. I was, again, kind of my first training camp, kind of in awe. I went to the rookie camp. I played really, really well the first 2 days, And then all of a sudden I got a call from my agent. He was like, yeah, they want to sign you. They think you're ready to play pro right now. And it was kind of crazy. I spent all summer thinking I was going to go back and play junior. And then 2 days into training camp, they wanted to offer me a contract and everything, which was just again a cool experience. I went through training camp. I actually was the last forward cut. I thought I made the team as a 20-year-old. We had the last exhibition game on a Sunday. Season was starting Thursday. Normally, that's when they make their final cuts. Boom, they get their roster. You practice with your team for 3 days, then you go play the first game. And I came in for practice on Monday. I didn't get cut the day before. They cut all my buddies. They were going back to Hartford, and I'm showing up to practice Monday. I was like, man, I'm in the NHL. Like, I actually made the team. I come into the dressing room in the morning. I'm looking around. I'm like, I don't see my gear. I see the trainer. I'm like, hey, where's my gear? He's like, oh, we, sir. Yeah, you have to go see Tom. And I was like, oh no. So I was like, obviously I got cut. So then I went and had a good meeting with him. It was kind of funny to get cut that way. And then I went down to the minors, and I didn't get called up until my third year pro. So I first year was kind of a learning experience. I think for anybody comes from junior to pro, it's just a completely different game. Again, you're living by yourself for the first time. It's a bit of an adjustment. You go from being a star on your junior team and back to the bottom of the ranks again, playing on the fourth line, in and out of the lineup a little bit to start and kind of work my way through. Then my second year pro, again, I thought I was pretty close to the NHL at that point. I had a really, really good second year. Probably for my age and anybody that was 23 and under, I probably had as many goals as anybody that year. And I got called up at the end of that year, and it was kind of a weird situation. I got called up with like 3 weeks left in the season, and you have a limit of call-ups after the trade deadline. And I was the last call-up, so I knew from then on I was staying for the rest of the year, which I thought was awesome. I was like, "Hey, you can't send me down. I'm going to play." I dressed in about six or seven warm-ups. I never got a chance to play a game because I had so many guys injured. They're all game time decisions. I never got to play that year. That was the year they lost to Philly, the last game of the year. Didn't make it in the playoffs. And then finally, the third year I came back. I got off to a good start in the minors. And then finally, I got called up there. It might have been December after a couple months. Your first NHL game is just kind of a dream come true. You're looking at your jersey. You're kind of looking around. Chris Jury sitting beside me, a guy that I idolized growing up, and it was just a surreal feeling. That was a dream come true. Something again I'll never forget.
Certainly, and I guess that's so interesting where you talk about sort of being that healthy scratch in terms of all these guys getting injured and being game time decisions, and how relatable is that towards the league now? Because especially myself as being a Leaf fan, and you get all these complaints about, oh, why didn't you play this player, or why don't you play him, or where could he slot into? And I guess like this is an important question I'd love to ask you, because I guess when you look at a player like Ryan Reeves in terms of the heavyweight class that he brings, in terms of I guess the toughness that they expect him to bring in, and yeah, he's been a healthy scratch for pretty much a handful of games here, but he got in against Winnipeg and he scored one goal, and all of a sudden he looks like a legend. And all of a sudden people are like, he's the Wayne Gretzky. I'm like, nah, I got settled out there. But that's a great impression by Ryan Reeves, where he was sort of hungry and he knew that people were overlooking him. And the article about the injury that he was battling with, and his knee brace or something like that. When you sort of look at a player like that, and who's had tons of experience in the NHL already, playing with Vegas, playing with the Rangers, and now playing with the Leafs, and being a healthy scratch for a handful of games, and yourself now, early on where you had to be a healthy scratch because of game time decisions, what do you sort of tell, sort of, I guess, those younger players who might be experiencing that nowadays about, like, how do you handle that? What do you tell them in terms of handling that sort of adversity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, to speak on Ryan Reeves, obviously a guy I know very familiar, being from Winnipeg, very similar age. He's a year older than me. So I've known him, or I've seen him play, and didn't know him personally, but I've seen that guy play since he was 12 years old. So and he's had a tremendous career too. It bothers me the way that things have gone from in Toronto, and kind of the negativity that's kind of been thrown his way, which is completely unfair. I don't think people understand how hard it really is to play that role. Not only the enforcer role, that's a completely different bag. That is an extremely tough role that unless you've ever done that or are doing it, you can understand that. Like you just can't understand the mental grind that that takes on you. That is not just an on the ice thing. That is a full 24 hours a day mental grind to do that job, and it's not for the faint of heart. And as for being kind of a fourth line energy guy that doesn't play a lot of minutes, people do not understand how hard it is. They think, sitting there for 30 minutes on the bench and then going to have a shift and having your legs and feeling confident and that is easy. It's not. And then you go and sit in the stands for 3 weeks. Well, when you're a healthy scratch in the NHL, it's pretty much feels like you're not part of the team. You pretty much feel like an assistant coach. You're not part of game meetings, practices, you're not taking all the reps. The guys that are playing the game are taking the reps. You get some extra reps, you stay on the ice after maybe. Morning skates, you barely get to do anything. Then everybody gets off the ice, then you get bagged after. You pretty much feel like an assistant coach. It's a terrible place to be. It's not fun. I did a lot in Philly and it was terrible. And it's just such a mental grind. I don't think people understand that. So I feel for Reba. I was really happy to see him come back. And I'm a Jets fan now, but I was still happy for him because I can respect and appreciate the spot that he's in. But for young guys, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. You go from, I think another thing people misunderstand is when you watch fourth line guys in the NHL, these guys, most of the time were superstars in junior. And if you want to have a long career and you're not going to be an elite, first, second line power play guy, you have to find a role in the NHL or you'll just never stay there. You'll play 1 year, 2 year, maybe you get 3 years out and they'll just find somebody else that'll do the role more efficiently. So you got to carve out your role as a third line penalty killer and, chip in your 10, 15 goals a year, or as a fourth line guy, be able to fight, be an energy guy, be great in the dressing room. And if you can't do all those intangibles and do those consistently, they'll just find somebody else. So it's a very difficult spot. And as a young guy, regardless of what league you're in, just trying to stay sharp, like I said, when you're not getting those practice reps, not getting the game reps, trying to stay confident is the hardest thing. And I don't have the exact answer for you. It's really hard to tell somebody that's going through that, well, you got to be confident. It's like, well, where do you get confidence? You get confidence from playing and having success. You don't get it by, standing there in practice. Yeah, you can work on a lot of things. You can do those extra skill work and stuff, but you get confidence by having success and repetition and doing things over and over and over and over in games. It's very, very hard to replicate when you're sitting in the stands for 2 months. But just being mentally sharp. And when you do get the opportunity, you got to be ready, regardless of how confident you're feeling. You got to convince yourself that you're confident. And when you get that opportunity, you got to find a way to succeed.
Absolutely. And also, like, touching on that point about a young guy like Nick Robertson, who's now having a chance to play on that Leafs roster. And yeah, people can talk about the possibility of him being traded because he's not been able to play in a handful of games as of late. But now he is. Now he's getting the chance. And all of a sudden, when he entered the lineup, he sort of produced. He actually really produced well on that Domi line. And all of a sudden, they have a chemistry going, and you saw that hot streak of losing games, and people were calling for the firing of Sheldon Keefe, and they're like, "Well, Sheldon doesn't know what he's doing, and his line combinations are not good, and he's being outcoached or whatever." But ultimately, I think what he's been doing, and I like what he's been doing. I think he's been sending a message to the top line of the power play unit too, where he basically said that if they don't find their rhythm in this next game, we're going to mix it up and see if we can get a different combination going to get that streak going again with the power play, because they're deadly, man, if they score like that. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley, Tavares, and people will be like, that's like a dream team, man. Like, that's an absolute dream team. Like, not like the Jets. I'm saying, like, the Jets are great and all, but when you look at the Leafs power play units, their first and second unit, they're full of superstar caliber players. Like, that's an ultimate team in FIFA. Like that's pretty much the ultimate team. What else could you ask for? And in terms of Nick Robertson, when you see a young guy like that's struggling but now is producing, and trying to solidify his spot in the lineup, what do you sort of tell that young player to do or to think about when he's sort of producing at that level now?
When I think of, I mean, I played against him in the bubble, and I remember watching him. And it's obviously this was 4 years ago, but I remember when we played him in an exhibition game, and I was like, "Man, this kid is good. He's got all the talent you could ask for in his bag. Great hands, sees the ice well, great shot. He can fly. You when you're a skilled guy like that, you're hoping he's got some good people in his ear, just telling him, you know." Again, it's all about finding that confidence. And when you're not playing, like I said, it's very hard to have that confidence. But just remembering, you know, this, you didn't lose your skill. Your skill didn't just magically, you showed up at the rink one day and it went out the window. So finding those reps, finding that success, it's tough. It's tough. There's not a lot of things you can say to somebody who has been in another lineup. And I'm glad to see a guy come in like that and produce. But again, he's a guy that has to be put in good situations. He's not a guy you're going to throw in the fourth line and play 8 minutes, and people are going to wonder, well, why is he not scoring? And you see it around the NHL at times where a guy's breaking in and you're expecting him to score and he's playing 8 minutes a night. It's like, well, he has to be in a situation where he's playing with good players that can play at his level and give him some minutes, let him play and let him feel his way through some of the struggles. And that's a hard thing to do in the NHL when winning is the principle every single day.
For sure. And I guess you sort of learned that from Torts, I guess. And speaking of Torts, I want to talk about the Vancouver Canucks, that line brawl that happened, because that's probably to date, probably one of the more iconic plays that has happened in hockey as in recent days, in recent time. I mean, it was funny how I was listening to sort of one of the interviews that you were doing about it, and I was sort of like getting a just a better, clear idea of how that transpired, and sort of Torch just came into you guys and said, well, they're going to be starting Westgaard, they're going to be starting McGrattan, and whoever else they had out there, and then sort of it was you and Sestito and Lane, and Bieksa, and then all of a sudden the whole he didn't really stop you guys, like he really didn't stop you guys from anything happening on the ice, and then he comes into the dressing room and he in a vulnerable position and saying and apologizing to you guys where he's saying like I shouldn't have done that to you guys or whatever. But then you sort of also mentioned how you respected the hell out of him for not only being that vulnerable but also being real with you. Tell me what you've sort of taken away from John Tortorella and sort of his coaching abilities and what kind of a coach is he in terms of this league now, I guess.
Yeah, so I have had many ups and downs with Torts. So he was in New York, sorry, when I was there, first of all. So he came in again, like I said, I almost made the team in 20 when Tom Rennie was there. Second year I got called up, and I think Torts took over that second year. So I came in at the end of that year, a good prospect for us. I was having a great year in the minors. And I liked him, and he was, I mean, I wasn't even playing, so it wasn't like I could really get a feel for it. Again, I was just kind of the extra for the last 3 weeks there, so I didn't really have a lot of interactions with him. Came to training camp the next year and thought I was, I thought I was on the cusp at that point. I thought I was pretty close, had a really good training camp. And, we had a little bit of a battle when he was, sending me down, and I thought, I straight up told him, I was like, I think I'm better than this guy. I think I'm better than this guy on your team. I think I'm better than this guy. And we kind of went back and forth a little bit. And I think he liked that originally, because I think he likes guys that stand up for himself and kind of have that confidence. So I wouldn't say we got off to a bad foot there. My third year, I think I don't know, 10 or 12 games I played. I didn't play a lot, played 4 or 5 minutes. I was kind of that. I came back my fourth year, I got cut again, got picked up on waivers. That's when I went to Vancouver. And then, my second interaction with him in Vancouver, a little bit older, I was a little more established. But again, I don't think he thought very much of me as a player. Didn't play, like, again, I was playing such a limited role there. There wasn't, it's not like I could really, say I disliked him or I really liked him. It was just such a limited role. And again, I was there for maybe half a season before I got traded again. So, do I think he's a good X and O's coach? And do I think he's really like tactical? No, I don't. I wouldn't say he's the most tactical guy, but I think he's a great motivator. I think he does care about his player. That's why I say I respect him so much, because I think he does care about his players. I think he's genuine when he says things. You know where you stand with him, which is all you can really ask for as a coach. I've had a lot of coaches that kind of give you the runaround, don't really tell you the truth, maybe push blame on the GM, and then he pushes it back on the coach. There's so many like that that just can't be honest with you, and I just have no respect for that. So I gotta say, I respected his honesty. Aside from hockey, as a hockey coach, I respect him as a man. I really enjoyed him as a person. I think he's a great person, and I think we could have some good laughs together now if I ever saw him and we had a couple beers together.
Certainly, and I was just seeing a video of John Tortorella last night about I think it was a video about it was the question where he was talking about Kevin Hayes, and I think it was one of the reporters who asked the question, but then he actually asked the reporter himself. He said, "Did I answer your question before about the Kevin Hayes situation or something like that?" And then. And I think he confirmed that he was the person who asked that question. He's like, "I'm not answering any of your questions," and he just hands down shut him down for any question that he's not going to take any more from him, which is just classic John Tortorella right there. And like, he just protects his players even though they're not on their team anymore. He'll still back up his players that he's been able to coach over the years. And that's just the type of guy that I just admire John Tortorella a lot. And I think if there was anybody that would have replaced Sheldon Keefe in Toronto, and if John Tortorella was available, I would probably look at John Tortorella as a replacement. Because
You might be the only person to say that. I don't think that would be a good, I don't think that's a good move. And I do not think he would coach in a market like that. And I do not think their top players would think that's a good idea.
you don't think that would be a good idea?
No, absolutely not.
Look, the only reason why I'm saying John Tortorella would be a good fit in Toronto is because we've seen all this talk about the core group, and they're not finishing on the biggest of moments in the playoffs, and they're not succeeding, and they're not getting that motivation where, they want to score. They don't have the passion for scoring in the playoffs for some reason. And their defense has been just something as of a concern for many years, and we can talk all about it. We've heard all the talk recently about, well, they're looking for D, and they've been looking for D for years, man. They've been looking for D since they last won their Stanley Cup, and that's nothing to deny. I think that's just been just blatantly clear. They've been struggling on D for many, many years. It's not just a 1 year thing. And in terms of sort of like during your career, where I guess like you've seen teams where they've had those moments where they're not very good on the defensive part, but they're really good on the scoring end. But then when they're not scoring, their defense is playing remarkably well. And it's just a whole difference of, well, how do you balance that? How do you get a good balance of both in one season and consistencies and stuff like that? I guess when you sort of look at this whole thing with the league now, and you're seeing teams adjusting and seeing how the Vegas Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup, and they're saying that they won with good defense. They won with strong defense, but they also got scoring from their top players at the right moments. I guess what would you like to see in terms of when you look at teams like Montreal and you look at teams like Toronto, and what do you say to these Canadian teams specifically, in order to end this cup drought for Canadian teams, I guess?
Well, I think if you look at Vegas as an example, I think you look at their depth. Like they got quality production out of every single forward that played in their lineup. Their fourth line was effective. They didn't maybe score a lot in the playoffs, maybe just a handful between the three of the guys that they had there, but they were effective. They got quality minutes. They wore teams down. Vegas was a big team too. I think that still gets lost. Yeah, there's a ton of skill now, and there's some high-end teams, and I think it really gets lost that Vegas is a big team, and they're hard to play against last year. You watch them again this year. They're just a solid team. When you look at a team like Toronto, I don't know if you can compare their depth to some of the top teams in the league. When you go down the lineup and look at their third and fourth line and look at the complete sixes, it's just really hard to compare them to some of the top teams that have just a full lineup where you're going down and you look at the riches on their third and fourth line, you're like, wow, like these are deep teams. I just think you need that depth when you get to the playoffs. Your superstars have to be your superstars and they got to score. And I think it's probably fair to say that they haven't in the last couple of years in the playoffs. Maybe not all of them combined. Maybe one has a good game this game and one Matthews plays well here and Tavares has a good night here and Nylander, who I think has been pretty solid in the playoffs the last couple of years, but you just kind of need everybody consistently at the same time, and they got to get some help from somebody else. I can't think of watching them in the last couple of years in the playoffs where I've thought, wow, like this guy on their fourth line played really well. This guy on their third line, what really stood out for me, I just haven't seen it. It's like, they're hanging in games and you get a big goal from Matthews, you get a big goal from Nylander, but it's just like having that depth is just, it's just not there. And if you're going to win in the playoffs, that's a 2 month grind. You just got to have more depth. And I just, unfortunately, I don't see it for the Leafs right now.
I couldn't agree more with you. I couldn't agree more on that point because, as a Leaf fan, watching every playoff game that I've seen, the problem with the Maple Leafs, and I don't want to make this all about the defense because I think defense has been a blatant issue for many years, but I think another issue has been Sheldon Keefe's sort of unwillingness to put out that top line again when they score. Because when they score, their top line scores, or one of their top, I guess, core members of the group scores, like Tavares scores, or Matthews scores, or Nylander scores. But then once they bench them, once they come back and they put the face off the center ice again, they put the fourth line out against their top line. And then they get scored on. They get hemmed in, they get scored on. Then they put out the Matthews line again. They score. They take the lead. Then they put the fourth line right back out. They get hemmed in. The Ryan Reeves line again. They got scored on every single moment. And I'm not saying Ryan Reeves is a bad player. Just you got. I feel like you've got to learn when to put out that fourth line because that's a mismatch. If you're putting out the fourth line of Ryan Reeves against a Kucherov line, how many of those times is Kucherov going to score on that line? Like. It's just a difference of when you put out those lines and line changing as well. Because when the Leafs are going off the ice and they're making a change, they're all of a sudden caught flat-footed because they're making a change at the last second and they don't see that the attacking player could go on a breakaway here and pull off some silky move and put a top corner on your goaltender. And I guess it's just the little details in their game where they make the split second decision and it costs them. And it's just something that you've seen over and over again with this Leafs team. But when I see this Leafs team in terms of positivity, I guess they do get good goaltending when it matters the most, I guess, in terms of, yeah, the Reimer era was horrible. And I guess he's made some great saves and great times in his during his era in Toronto. But nowadays, we're seeing the concern with Ilya Samsonov, and we're seeing the concern with Martin Jones getting the huge load that he got, and now he's sort of wearing off, and now he's becoming that third goaltender again. And I guess giving him that rest was important, but seeing Ilya Samsonov back and the way he stoned the Jets those two games in a row, I just have to think that that 2-on-0 breakaway, I guess, was a huge confidence booster for Ilya Samsonov. I just couldn't believe the Jets missed that. They had a 2-on-0. Like you got to put that in the net. Like there's no other way around it. Well, I mean, so speaking of, I guess Ilya Samsonov or the Jets in general, in terms of this whole thing with the NHL these days. I mean, during your career, was there ever a moment, and we can make this brief. Was there ever a moment where you sort of ever thought about joining Toronto? Were you ever close to going to Toronto, I guess?
Not really. 2016, when I was a free agent, I had a brief conversation with them. But I again, playing for Montreal, growing up as a Montreal Canadiens fan, that the Leafs were like, just personally, they were not high on my list. Not saying if they would have made me a probably a similar offer, I would have considered it 100%. But I looked at different teams and different offers and just thought I was a better fit on some other teams. So I didn't really give it a look, too much thought from that standpoint.
For sure. Well, I mean, we've reached the end of our time together, but thank you so much for speaking with me. It's been a huge pleasure to be able to talk with you and to learn more about your career and what you've been doing off the ice. So thank you again.
Appreciate it. I'd happy to do it again sometime.
All right. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with retired NHL player. He's the host of the Habs Tonight podcast. He's an investor and private lender, Dale Weiss. You can reach Dale on his socials for more. If you enjoy this episode, you'd like to help support the podcast, feel free to share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow the show on all social media platforms. I've been your host, Shigmi Kelting. Thanks for tuning into the show.
Thank you.